Get ready for a journey into the heart of Bridgeport politics with In Absentia, a new podcast from Connecticut Public's investigative team, The Accountability Project. Learn about the city's past and present political dysfunction and the systems that enable it. Tune in wherever you get your podcasts.
Funding provided by Francisco L. Borges and the Melville Charitable Trust.
Okay, that's not really a jazz song, but we are going to be doing jazz music all day long today. You know, nine songs. We're going to talk about nine songs. And I can guarantee you that if I'd said to our panelists today, who are, by the way, Jen Allen, pianist, composer, arranger, educator, member of the BMI Workshop in New York City, also faculty at Trinity College, Gene Seymour, the mayor of our year-end jazz review every year, critic, reviewer for Hire, writing pieces for CNN.com's opinion section, contributes essays to Book Forum and The Baffler, Noah Behrman, pianist, composer, educator, founder, and artistic director of the nonprofit Resonant Motion. He also directs the jazz ensemble at Wesleyan University. Anyway, I was in the middle of a sentence there. If I'd said to those panelists, you know what, these nine songs, just for various reasons we can't use any of them, could you give me nine more by nine different artists with different 2019 releases? No, I'm fairly sure, certain that all of you could have easily done that and not felt as though anything was getting lost quality-wise in the process. And we probably could have repeated that cycle again with nine more. There's just a lot of really, really great music out there these days.
I couldn't agree more. I mean, calling it the best jazz of the year show comes off the tongue better than the semi-arbitrarily chosen favorites as of the moment when we had to make decisions about it. But
I think more so this year because there was an awful lot to choose from. Mm-hmm. I mean, there always is, but this was a tough one. This was a tough one. There's an awful lot of good stuff that got left off my list anyway.
Right. We're going to transcribe Noah's alternative title. We might actually use it as like on the web page or something like that. I actually like that one better.
Thank you. Makes a nice acronym, I think.
Exactly. And it's more accurate. I mean, what can you do? I looked at lots of other people's, best jazz albums of the year. And, you know, I mean, there's some overlap, but there's also everybody's got 5 out of the 10 that nobody else has. And Jen, I think one reason for that too is that the pipeline's different than it was 20 or 25 years ago. Like one of Noah's selections is a young woman born in Santiago, Chile, who then winds up going to the Berklee School of Music in Boston and now, you know, has pulled together a quartet of, for the most part, you know, well, a kind of a mixture of different kinds of jazz musicians, including the breakout vibe player of the year. I mean, that whole career trajectory, it didn't exist. If you go very far back in the past, that person just doesn't happen, right?
Yeah. It's the interconnectedness of our society has changed so much, including the jazz education model and the jazz world as it is. There's so many musicians and a lot of really talented musicians making some really amazing music.
All right, so we're going to begin with three songs. We got to get through all nine, so we're going to begin with three different songs that have a kind of common theme running through them, and they are very calculatedly expressions of music that begins with the word Afro and then a hyphen, right? So the African diaspora, as it is expressed variously in different parts of the quote-unquote New World. We're going to begin with, I think, one of Gene's selections. This is by Etienne Charles from the album Carnival, The Sound of a People, Volume 1. Why don't we just play some of this and then the panel can discuss it. I hate to fade it, and this is always especially, I think, an unpardonable sin with a lot of these jazz cuts, because a lot of them, you know, 4 minutes in, there's like this really delicious piano break or something like that that's like really makes the whole thing. But, you know, and if we had more time, we'd play the whole thing. Anyway, we're not going to do that. We're going to talk about it instead. So, Gene, first of all, get us set up here. The we should say that the cut's called Dame, or perhaps Dame Lorraine.
Right.
And tell us a little bit more about this particular artist in this album.
Yeah. Etienne Charles, by the way, this was my number one pick of the year. Etienne Charles has been sort of knocking on the door of widespread fame for some time now. He's a trumpet player from Trinidad, and he's made a lot of concept albums that deal with certain parts of what we call the Caribbean. He's included, and he includes New Orleans to some extent in that, because some people think that New Orleans is kind of a Caribbean country, certainly a culture. He's also done things on called something called the San Jose Suite, which talks about the different San Jose's, not just the one in Costa Rica. But this is the first time he's gone back to his homeland in Trinidad. And he went all out on this. I mean, to the extent that he actually went to some of the street bands of Trinidad and recorded some of the actual street bands, some of whom he's actually kind of played with every once in a while. And he's taken some of the riffs and some of the motifs of these particular bands, and he's found ways to sort of inject these very, very modern inventions using some of the musicians that he works with and knows very well, including David Sanchez on tenor, who we'll hear from later in another track. But every track on this has that kind of distinctive personality that you just heard in that track that Colin just excerpted, and it just lit up my head from the first time I heard it. That's the best way I can put it.
I just wanted to say that one thing that I discovered, which I probably should have known, getting ready for the show and kind of annotating you guys your selections, is that steel drums come from the fact that the British government in the late 19th century in Trinidad outlawed drums. They thought drums were dangerous. These would be kind of skin drums for the most part. They thought they were dangerous, might lead to uprising, might allow people to send hidden messages to one another, might help in the resistance to Christianization. And so they banned them. And then the Trinidadians started wrapping on bamboo, pieces of bamboo, and that got banned. So that's how we wound up with people bringing stuff out from the kitchen, you know, and playing it and then kind of tuning it up to what it is now. So, Noah, I think you were giving me the universal signal for bass player as this was going. Is there a particular bass player?
I was just pointing out that Connecticut native Luquez Curtis plays on that particular track. There's actually two Connecticut native bass players, John Michel, the other, who appear on this record.
Right.
Just bring it back to Connecticut for a second.
Well, yeah. I mean, I think the bass was invented in Connecticut by Paul Brown and Nat Reeves or something. So, you know, it's no reason why we shouldn't do this. So, Jen, any of your own reactions to this? This is going to segue nicely into one of your selections, Godwin Louis, but react to this, too.
Yeah, no, I was thinking that it's very similar to my one of my selections, and I love the mixing of sounds, the not purely straight, you know, swing or whatever, but the textures that come with all the different instrumentations and the way that he's using them. So I really enjoy it.
Yeah, a lot of fun. Well, actually, let's go right from there so we stay on schedule into Godwin Louis. This is from the album Global, and this is called Nago Congo.
Thank you.
Jen Charles before him, Godwin Louis, is very self-consciously. I mean, the album's called Global. There's no mystery about what he's doing. He's, once again, very, very interested in specific kinds of expressions of the African diaspora. He went to Africa, I think, 5 times in 4 years, traveling all over the place, trying to understand how things start there and turn into what they are in other parts of the Americas. So, I don't know, say more about why you particularly chose this.
I think the reason I got the album is because I knew Godwin from years ago. We played a gig together, and he plays with a lot of musicians that I play with, so I keep track of him online. And when his album was coming out, I got it. And I do that with a lot of people's albums that I, as much as I can. And this, this one in particular, I put it on, and that first track just reminded me of one of my all-time favorite albums by Kenny Kirkland. And I messaged him, and I was like, man, this is the textures, again, the layering of the different sounds. It just, it brings me to that emotional place. And, you know, the what he's trying to do, I mean, I think he succeeds really well in trying to, you know, the title of the album is Global. He's really incorporating all the different melodies and sounds that are from around the world, but bringing them into his own unique way of doing it. And he's such a talented instrumentalist that he really just succeeds in bringing all the musicians that he has on this album. He has a lot of musicians on it and having them catch the vision that he has.
Right. And we may see some overlap again among these three albums. We should say, since Noah has set us down the course of shouting out Connecticut, that Godwin Louis grew up kind of in Haiti and Bridgeport, Connecticut. His family had come here. So I don't know if there's sort of a Haitian Bridgeport sound. I guess he is the Haitian Bridgeport sound. But yeah, Noah, just react a little bit.
Yeah, he's got a really unique sound that he's developed. Obviously, he's got roots that are coming from a lot of different places and things that he's explored. But he's an extremely warm human being, and that really comes out in the joy of this music. I've played some of this music. It's really hard. And I say that just to point out how effortless they make it sound. He's sort of developed a rhythmic and harmonic vocabulary that's fairly specific to him, and he's got a crew of musicians who are of an age and a musical context where they're fluent in being able to glide along these rhythms that are really quite tricky.
Gene, how about you?
Well, this may sound like a totally left field reaction, but when I was hearing some of the chord changes, and this will really throw things into an international perspective, I kept hearing "Dear Old Stockholm" in some of the changes. You know, that Miles Davis tune that they did many, many years ago from a Swedish folk tune. I think Stan Getz wrote the tune originally, but I kept hearing those kind of changes, and taking that kind of those shards of it tonally kind of enhances the feel of that. I loved the chords, I guess, for want of a better word. I love the way they kind of melted over the beat. I was on board with it.
One thing that I can say about Godwin Louis is in all that traveling, so he really, tried to identify things that he heard sometimes in Haiti. Like, could he find them in Africa? Particularly very specific kind of polyrhythmic things. And so one reason this is called Nago Congo, Nago is a term that he heard in Haiti. And it was a rhythmic term that he knew from Haiti. And he tracked it back to a tribe in Benin. He says Nago is pretty much the Yoruba people in Benin. And Nago would be kind of a term, too, that you might use in Nigeria to describe somebody from Benin. This has been a real effort in kind of shoe leather scholarship. He's really trying to kind of really go out and, you know, track things back to their sources, which is pretty exciting.
Very similar to the Charles. Similar to the Charles.
And I think we can now make a pretty easy jump from there to David Sanchez, one of Noah's picks this year. I did notice that the Godwin Louis and Sanchez share at least a drummer, Obed Calvert. This is the Land of the Hills from the album Carib. We'll play a little bit of it, and then we'll get Noah talking about it. No, we should say that, you know, the Etienne Charles album has volume one at the end of it. Sanchez, who hasn't, I think, released a record in a while now.
It's been 10 years, yeah.
Yeah, he's talking about doing a series of albums around this concept.
Yeah, and this one, like Godwin's, is also a double album already. So he's got a lot. It's been 10 years, and it's the first thing he's done since his wife passed a couple years ago. So there's a certain extra level of emotional urgency to what he's doing. But it's really one thing that's been interesting for me, maybe Jen can relate to this, to observe through my own development is the emergence of certain what I might call bilingual musicians, in the sense that it used to be that there was Latin jazz folks who could maybe play straight ahead jazz okay, and there was straight ahead jazz folks who could maybe play credible Latin jazz, but David and a couple of the musicians on this record, Ricky Rodriguez on bass and Luis Perdomo on piano, are kind of at the forefront of folks who can swing like crazy and have a really deep and scholarly and authentic awareness of these Latin rhythms. Plus, David is just an incredibly emotionally compelling musician. He's only a few years older than I am, but really one of the guiding voices among my age group in my own development. Been listening to him since I was just trying to figure, I mean, I'm still trying to figure out this music, but since I was first trying to figure it out.
Jen Allen, he said you might have some reaction to his statement.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I don't really know this album at all. So, and David Sanchez, I haven't really checked him out as much as I, you know, I've heard little things here and there, and this is kind of inspiring for me to, I always learn something new here on the show. This is my one of them that I'm going to be learning. There's a couple, actually.
Gene, I want you to react to this too. But as I was trying to keep track of, you know, the thing that Noah brought up, like who's from Connecticut and stuff like that. And I can't remember who it was, but it might be Godwin Louis. But there's somebody who said, "Oh yeah, well I met this musician at the Litchfield Band Camp, the jazz camp." I mean, this jazz scene in Connecticut is kind of incredible. Just how everybody kind of gets tied together through all these programs.
Yeah. It always was. I mean, all over the state. I used to think it was just Hartford, where these weird interactions took place, but it's all over. And I want to say also that just sort of tying all these things together in one ribbon, one of the many interesting and exciting developments in music, not just jazz or so-called jazz, but jazz, is how all these combinations of bringing in Caribbean music, African music, and trying to sort of quietly, not yoke them together with whatever traditions are in American jazz or American popular music, but just to get them together. I mean, this is almost as exciting and transformative potentially as all the things we talk about in history books now, like bebop and swing. I mean, there's something happening here that deserves wider recognition and acknowledgement somehow by the mainstream that you know, that all three of these albums represent, in my opinion.
Yeah, and once again, Sanchez is doing this in a very, very deliberative way. And he's been taking residencies in certain places. He says he's gravitating towards places, like in most Latin American countries, there's a town or two that are basically the fullest expression of the African diaspora. So in Puerto Rico, where he's from, I think it's Loiza. I don't know if I'm saying that right. I'm going to mispronounce everything today. So, and in Colombia, where he's just done a residency, there's a town called, I think it's Palenque or Palenque. Once again, sorry about the pronunciations, but it is established by people who had escaped from the nearby port city in 1691. It's not too far from Cartagena, I think. And he's going to these places and seeing what happens in a Latin American country where there's a community that's trying to keep the African sounds the most alive, which I think is really exciting. Yeah. I'm sounding really knowledgeable about this. I didn't know anything about anything at 9 a.m. this morning.
Very well.
Well, let's grab a quick break. Maybe we're going to go out with a little more David Sanchez, and then we got six more songs to play for you. Hi, we're back. I'm Colin McEnroe. This is, at least theoretically, the Colin McEnroe Show. And every year we do this show. It's the Best in Jazz. We do it with the mayor of the Best in Jazz, Colin McEnroe Show, Gene Seymour. I don't know if that's a title that carries any more power than, you know, what we can give it, but he is the mayor. Critic, reviewer, all that kind of stuff. Jen Allen, pianist, composer, arranger, educator. Noah Behrman, pianist, composer, educator. See, there's kind of a little pattern coming up here. So we're here today. We're going through nine songs. They don't, you know, we can't really claim these are the nine best songs or anything because there's so much out there and there's, you know, there's some other consensus albums that we're just not even going to get to. The Chris Davis one, I think, is on a lot of people's lists. But we're going to, this is my favorite of the nine. It's one of Jen's choices. I am absolutely going to be spending a lot of time listening to this particular album. It's by a performer and now I think composer arranger, maybe more significantly called Remy Leboeuf, if I'm saying that right, from the album Assembly of Shadows. This is the song Strata. I wish we could play this whole thing. So it's like 8 minutes long or something. But there are these huge harmonic honeyed payoffs that you get here. Jen, we were sitting down in the lobby. I said, when I first heard it, I thought, oh, Prokofiev and Brian Wilson had a baby. But there are a lot of other ways to react to this. So tell us a little bit more about the artist and the choice.
Well, I met Remy a couple of years ago when I joined the BMI workshop in New York. And he was there... he had won the competition the year before. At the end of the year, they always have a competition for the composers. And so he had won, and he was there. And just I got to know him through that, and I got to see him and how he worked and his composing. And I just gained a lot of respect for him in that way. And then I started hearing him play, and I was like, wow, he's an amazing performer, like multi-instrumentalist, saxophonist. And he can play oboe. He can pretty much do anything. And then he came out with this album, and I heard it for the first time, and I was like, yeah, like this is a composition. You know, composition's really close to my heart. And if I could write, this is kind of where I'm going with my writing. He knows how to orchestrate. He knows how the instruments work. He knows how to manipulate the music to his will. And so I have nothing but admiration for him. And just like you, I think, Colin, like I just have a visceral reaction to the actual music on this album. It just hits a very emotional place. And Remy's such a warm, sweet person that it really does reflect that in these compositions.
You hear so much in this. By the way, this little grouping that I've artificially crammed into a pigeonhole, we're kind of calling this concept albums. This is a 30-minute suite in five movements, follows the story of a child who runs away into a nearby forest, gets lost, falls asleep, wakes up, the shadows of the trees have come alive, and they dance with her, and they guide her home as the moon sets, and she wakes up in her own bed, wondering if it was all a dream. So it's sort of like, so as long as I'm doing these little, you know, portmanteaus, this is like Rilke's telling of Wizard of Oz or something.
I think this first one, though, I don't think this first one is actually part of the suite, if I'm correct. I think that's that, and then the Assembly of Shadows is after it. He has one extra song on it.
So, Noah, let's hear from you on this.
Well, it's interesting. I was one of the crowdfunding supporters of this album, and which is not a shout-out to myself, but just sort of an observation of part of what it means to be an ambitious creator of music in 2019 is obviously Remy's got a ton of vision. He's got all these sounds going about his head. And then the next step when you've got that is figuring out how am I going to bring this thing to fruition, you know, in a marketplace that is not necessarily profitable. And yet what makes us get up and breathe is knowing that we can bring these ideas to fruition. And I'm really impressed by how ambitious this is and how meticulously he pulled it all off.
This is a huge band, and to be able to afford to record it and pay the musicians, it's an overwhelming task, and he did an amazing job with it.
There's actually a YouTube video, which maybe we can even get up on the webpage for the show, that shows the recording session for this particular cut. And wow, it's clearly not going to be something they're going to do in concert a lot.
He did do something last night.
Oh, really? And I see that he's touring. I don't know if he's touring. He can't be touring with
He's not touring with the big band, but he does some stuff in New York with that, so people are interested.
If you want a visceral reaction, I got to get me this one.
Yes. Yeah,
I really got to get this. This is really, really amazing. Just that line of stuff that she played. It's I did not hear of this before now. And again, this is, as you say, Jen, this is one of those reasons we do this. It's like, oh wow, how did I miss this? I'm a dope. I got to get it as soon as I leave the studio. So that's my reaction.
All right. So, me too. And I really do recommend Gene. Watch the video, too. It's kind of amazing.
Yeah.
I mean, he's really, this is an exercise in conduct. That's why I thought about Brian Wilson, too. It's like, I'm going to bring all these people in here, and I'm going to get them to play something that I have in my head. All right. So let's go from there. So, Wolfie, this is the one time. By the way, I have to do super special thanks to Kyan Wolf, who does this with me every year. She's the one who gathers up all the music and gets it all ready and plays it. And then I give her an order in which we're going to do it. And then it turns out that we are not going to do it that way because change gets made. So we're going to go to Visions by Melissa Aldana here from the album Visions. We're going to, because Noah persuasively said as we were just about to go on the air, that's more of a concept album than the thing that we had in its place. So here we go to that. This is Visions by Melissa Aldana from the album Visions. And Noah will talk about it afterwards. Say that speaking of best of 2019, on this album is Joel Ross, who is this breakout vibes player this year, who a lot of people feel like is the biggest jazz star to emerge in 2019. So, Noah, I said at the beginning to Jen, one of your choices is a woman born in Santiago, Chile. By the way, shout out to Nessa Rose, who's listening right now in Santiago, Chile. But then, you know, came north to study at Berkeley. So tell us more about this artist, why you picked her, and what you hear in her.
Well, it's interesting in that one of the facets of how the scene is changing is simply the access to music. So you can be growing up in Chile, but studying Don Byas and Sonny Rollins, two of her main influences, Mark Turner, sort of where she's coming out of as a saxophonist by her own statements. And she burst into public consciousness a few years ago when she won what was then called the Thelonious Monk competition. She was the first, thus far only, female instrumentalist to win that competition, and that there was a certain novelty to that, I think, that was a mixed blessing. But ultimately, she's a really serious artist and really pursuing her own sound.
And what makes this a concept album, too, is that a lot of it seems to be inspired by the work of Frida Kahlo, right?
Yeah. And sort of by proxy, being a female artist in a male-dominated field, mm-hmm. through the lens of Frida's work.
All right. Let's go around the table here. Gene, I'll go to you next. Give us your thoughts.
Well, I've been familiar with her stuff ever since she did win the Monk competition. And I think that sometimes the tradition that people that she confesses that she's emerged from is often written off as being, you know, very, very precise and dry and everything else. But I've never found that in her tone. I think there's something very, very committed and even sometimes passionate in a very strange way in how she plays, and having this kind of, again, all this kind of multiple rhythms kind of working around her, I think they really kind of pull her out even more. I was very impressed with what I heard here.
All right, how about you, Jen?
Yeah, I like it as well. I think it's always great to have. I hate that we have to even talk that she's a woman. Mm-hmm. As a woman, I get frustrated with that, but it is really important. It's important for a woman to be at a high level and to have that image for younger women coming up, because there's just not enough of it. And she does it at such a high level. So I can really appreciate that.
I should say that every year NPR does a sort of best music of the year, and they kind of throw out the categories and genres and just kind of let it fly. And this is there in that stream, too, in a list of the best music of the year, thanks to, I think, one particular jazz critic. And so let's transition from there to – so this last one, it's a Gene Seymour choice. It's not exactly a concept album, although Gene may choose to make the case that it is. We're going to play a little bit of it right now. This is an old Django Reinhardt tune, Pour que ma vie demeure. This is by the James Carter Organ Trio from the album James Carter Organ Trio Live at Newport. So, Gene, tell us about this, why you chose it, etc.
Well, it's not so much a concept as it is kind of a sequel to a concept album 20 years removed, because back in about 2005 or so, James Carter, who as you've noticed is part of a very distinct school of tenor saxophone playing. A lot of ecstatic, deep, bottom deep playing. And he did an album called Chasing the Gypsy, where he did, it was an homage to Django Reinhardt and the tradition he represented. And 20 years later, when he went, and this is like his first album, by the way, in like almost 10 years, he brought his organ trio, and instead of sort of going over to Reinhardt's house, he basically was, he in effect with this set was saying, "Hey, come over to my joint. You know, I want to see how you work in this motif." And as you can tell, it was startling just how well it all kind of blended together. And it's a lot, like I said, it's a live album, and the way the crowd reacts to some of the things he does and some of the music that he brings to it says that that this was more than just a gamble. This was very, very elevated thinking on his part.
I got to say, one of my favorite shows that we did all year was a show we did about the Roma people. I'm not sure we mentioned Django Reinhardt anywhere in that entire show about the Roma people, but there he is. So we need to go kind of quickly so we get to all of the music on the list, but I just want to get some snapshots. Noah, you want to go first?
Well, I first encountered James Carter in the mid-90s, and it's really interesting to hear how a thread that has continued since then is how he digs into what might seem on the surface to be oppositional musical forces. He plays bebop, he plays deep gut bucket blues, he plays some things that you might call avant-garde, sometimes all in the same tune, and it all feels, no pun intended, organically part of a unified voice.
Yeah, Jen?
I always love listening to live concerts just in general because if I couldn't be there, it's a nice snapshot of the energy because it's always different than being in a live studio and you just get a much more personal take on it. And I think that this one has that.
All right, so we're going to grab a quick break here. We've got three more songs to get to. I believe we can do that. So let's get going. All right, so we're back. We're back with Jen Allen and Noah Behrman and Gene Seymour. It's the best jazz of 2019, or whatever it is that Noah called it at the beginning. Nine songs that represent at least a pretty subjective sense of some really, really great jazz music, something along those lines. But just to kind of give you a taste of stuff you might have missed, I just want to say once again, thanks to Kion Wolf. She does all the work pulling these songs together. My other producers are working really hard right now on one or more future episodes of Pardon Me, Another Damn Impeachment Show, which is our new program that runs at noon on Saturdays, at least for the near future. It's a limited run here and also available by podcast. So I hope you do seek that out, too. All right. Let's get back to work here. It's not really work, though. It's mostly just fun. This is, Gene, one of your choices here. This is the Wind Up by a Branford Marsalis Quartet from the album The Secret Between Shadow and the Soul, Between the Shadow and the Soul. Let's play it first, and then Gene will talk to us a little bit about it. All right, Gene, roll away. Let me just see. Gene Seymour, are you still with us there? Oop, he might not be there. All right, so we'll track him down on the studio connection. So that means that you guys have to talk about, but this could be easy for the other two panelists, particularly it's, I'll say one thing about this that might actually spark something too, which is that one of the things I really noticed on this cut was the drummer and the drumming. And one of the things, I could be wrong about this, and I'm very happy to be shouted down. The drummer's a guy named Justin Faulkner, who joined the Branford Marsalis Quartet shortly before his high school graduation. And then has been there for about 10 years. And boy, the propulsive but really interesting musical, thoughtful, developing the song kind of drumming there is one of the things that really knocked me out about this. Gene, I understand you might be back on the line. Nah, maybe not so much. Okay, so you guys get to talk about it. So Noah, you take it.
Well, it is interesting. Justin's a Philadelphia-based musician, but there's a real New Orleans groove to the drum beat he plays here, which I find particularly interesting. This is a Keith Jarrett song, and from Keith's influential Scandinavian quartet from the 70s. And so hearing that sort of street beat vibe underneath it. I don't think I'm making this up, but I think I first heard Branford play this tune on a video with Bruce Hornsby. and I thought, wow, this is really good. And, yeah. But it's great to hear him with his quartet it out.
That's sort of an interesting point about Branford Marsalis, which is that he's had his foot in a lot of different worlds too, and you know, worked with Sting, you know, and worked with, I don't know, whose band was he in? He was in some late night band.
Jay Leno took over the Tonight Show, he was the band leader.
Okay, that's what it was. Okay. So, Jen, thoughts about this in case we never get Gene back?
Yeah. No, I love Branford. I've always loved Branford, and I have a very, you know, soft place in my heart because I think when I was starting out, like Branford's quartet, which back then had my favorite pianist in it, Kenny Kirkland, you know, I listened to it all the time. And this is, I love listening to the new iterations of his quartet and how, where he goes with it. It always has something fresh and new, and this is no exception.
All right, Gene, now you actually get to talk about your own song.
Yes. You know, I have to admit that when I pick these things, I always go over the things that I have trouble keeping out of my turntable or whatever. And this surprised me because in the past, I've always admired what Branford did. I've always enjoyed him. I love listening to him spritz and complain and all this other stuff about what jazz is or isn't and what it means to the public. And as I've said, I've always found that more lively or a lot more lively than his music, but this is an exception. This to me is the very best album he's put out in years.
Is it Keith Jarrett all the way through? Keith Jarrett?
Oh, no.
He has something to do with the album, though, right?
I'm not sure. Okay. How much he had to do with the album, but it's a lot of it is the compositions of the people in the band themselves. Mm-hmm. But they also do a piece by Andrew Hill, which is also really first rate, but it's just that these guys seem completely, completely dug in on this one in ways that I've only heard them live get this kind of excitement generated. And they just seem, I mean, Branford's always insisted that, hey, we're just a bunch of guys getting together to play jazz and just digging each other. And of course that always sounds great, but here it really does feel like everything he's spoken about it and spoken for it all these years. So.
All right, yeah. So we're going to transition now. This is a really puzzling one. This is a group called the Envisage Collective. As I understand it, there's this highly secretive jazz cult. Nobody really knows who's in this band. They wear masks when they perform, so you never know. Nobody has any idea who these people are. This track, I believe, is called Envisage. So the Envisage Collective, highly secretive. I could be sitting in a room right now with one of them, and like, how would I even know? And one of them conceivably could be here. But another person in this room could be married to one of them. Who knows? They're that profoundly secretive. No, you should explain, actually.
I just want to make sure nobody thinks this is nepotism, but you know.
But it is.
But it is, and only because I really like it, and I wouldn't bring out an album that I didn't really like, even if it was one of my best friends and one of my husband's. But so this collective, which used to be called the Remind me.
It used to be the Jazz Samaritan Alliance.
Right. So if you know that group, this is the group in a new form.
Yeah. But, so just so we're clear, that's the piano you're hearing is Noah. And then Jen's husband, Chris, is playing sax. And then there's other people playing too.
Yes. Nadia Nordhaus on trumpet and Ike Sturm on bass and Chris Stingman on vibes and Alan Mednard, I never say his name right, sorry, on drums. And this album, actually, we were sitting at Thanksgiving and somebody put some music on and I was like, oh, what is this? Because I hadn't actually heard the album. And Chris goes, oh, this is our new album. And I was like, oh, this is really good. and I had, Chris had been very humble about not even showing me any of it up until that point. But the amazing thing about it is that everybody wrote a song for the album, and each of the songs really represents each of the musicians that are on the album. And I love that. They're all very different, but you can see all the different personalities in each of the compositions.
Right. And I've been after Noah for years. Write a song about a Michael Pollan book. I mean, it's just, they're all natural choices for jazz. You finally did. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Yeah.
Listen to the people.
There is a song called Omnivore's Dilemma in there. Hey, just for, unfortunately, we're going to light speed past this just so we'll have a chance for Noah to talk up to the last cut we're going to play today. This is by a drummer, pretty young drummer, born in Winnipeg, very much part of the Harlem scene these days, Curtis Noah Saad. Tell us a little bit about this.
Great player, excellent composer. I first learned about him when he was very young. He was a student of my friend Jimmy Green's up in Winnipeg. And there's been a lot of drummers who've come out with socially conscious jazz albums this year. Terry Lynn Carrington's has been getting a lot of well-deserved hype. Jerome Jennings did a great one. And Curtis really deserves attention for not pussyfooting around issues and also digging in with some really soulful and intense music.
So we should say, first of all, that the song we're going to play here at the end is Never Forget What They Did to Fred Hampton. Actually, Gene, I'll give you a certain amount of undisclosed money if you can tell me the name of a famous musician who I believe was born on the day that Fred Hampton was extrajudicially killed by the FBI.
Okay, this would be 1970, right?
69.
69,
yeah.
Hmm.
It's too hard. It's Jay-Z. Jay-Z, in fact, he does rap about it. And we should say that the death of Fred Hampton, often referred to as an assassination, has been in the music of Gil Scott-Heron, Kendrick Lamar, Jay-Z, Rage Against the Machine, Ronnie Blakely of Nashville fame. So, Gene, is this a drummer that you know about? You know about this project?
I do not, but there is a lot of this kind of thing going on in music right now. It's not talked about much in the jazz world, and it should be.
Right. There's a lot of things pulled together. There's at least three songs, older songs, that are pulled into this one. But there's also, like, for example, a song about Colin Kaepernick. It's about time somebody wrote a song about Colin Kaepernick.
Sure. Yeah.
So, Jen, any quick words, and then we'll start playing the song.
This is just a reflection of Curtis. This is his life. Like, he's very passionate about these issues, and I didn't expect anything different from this album and from him.
All right. Well, we're going to end the show with it. We'll just sort of bring it up. But thanks to Noah Behrman and to Jen Allen and to Gene Seymour, the mayor of the Best in Jazz, Colin McEnroe Shows, now and forever. And here's Curtis Noah Saad.